Chapter 15. Saturday, 6:03 p.m. Burroughs led Lucy to an address off Fifth Avenue in Point Breeze. The Pittsburgh Center for the Arts was situated on a lush spread of grass a block away, adding a touch of class to the blue-collar neighborhood. She pulled up behind the detective's Impala and waited for him on the sidewalk. Her little blue Subaru looked distinctly unimpressive, parked behind the oh-so-obvious unmarked cop car. "Willie Stargell lived here." Burroughs swept a hand at the brick ranch house before them. They started up the drive. There was a long porch with a handicapped ramp. "In this house?" she asked, noting the curled shingles on the roof and the stained, sagging gutters.
"Well, no, I don't think so. This block, or maybe the next one over."
So much for Burroughs' treasure trove of baseball trivia. Lucy pushed the doorbell. The front door was open, only a screen door laced in white, wrought iron curls barred their entry. She looked inside. A long, narrow hallway with oak hardwood floors led into a darkened space in the rear of the house. A man appeared, flipping on a light switch, and she saw that the space was the kitchen. He stomped down the hallway as if he were climbing steps, his beer belly sloshing to and fro beneath his Steelers t-shirt. He wore Bermuda shorts, the kind that men of a certain age and physique really, really shouldn't ever wear, and had white socks on with dirty flip-flops.
"Yeah?"
he asked by way of greeting.
"Detective Burroughs."
Burroughs flipped his shield.
"Is Robert Fagley here? Where else would he be? What you want with Bobby? We need to speak with him."
Burroughs opened the screen door, not waiting for an invite. The man, who appeared in his mid-40s, twisted his mouth as if he'd swallowed some stale beer and stayed where he was, blocking their way.
"And you are?" "I'm his father, William Fagley. He ain't done nothing."
Lucy ignored the two men, more interested in the shadows playing against the wall of the kitchen beyond them. A motor whirred. The shadow of a man's head and torso, grotesquely deformed by the angle of the light, became visible. It appeared much too low on the wall, slowly inching up as it grew larger, reminding her of the monster the boy and girl in Ashley's drawing fought. A bizarre half-man, half-machine demon. The whirring stopped. A man's voice called from beyond the kitchen.
"Who is it, Pops?"
"The cops. They want..."
"Have you found Ashley?" The unseen voice broke with excitement, now sounding boyish. The whirring resumed, higher pitched as if a motor were being pushed to burn out. Lucy edged past Fagley in time to see the shadow collapse. A motorized wheelchair spun around the corner, filling the narrow corridor.
"Where's Ashley? Is she okay?"
The boy man in the wheelchair was tall but rail thin. Spindly legs velcroed into white plastic splints stuck out from a pair of gym shorts. His arms were equally wasted, one hand fastened to the wheelchair controls by another swatch of Velcro. His face was the only thing animated, alive. The rest of the body was rigid, supported by belts and buckles, but his face was the face of an angel. Ashley's angel. From her artwork. Blonde hair, wavy, past his collarbone, skin unmarred by either the shadow of a beard or too much sun. Crystalline blue eyes that tugged at Lucy as if she alone held the answers he needed. "Ashley?" he said again, slumping back into the chair, his face falling into the shadows. His father made a strangled noise but remained frozen as Lucy stepped past him and approached Bobby Fagley. When she drew near, she saw his tears. Twin tracks of anguish more heartfelt than any of the wailing she'd witnessed from the Yeagers.
"Bobby, I'm Lucy Guardino. I work with the FBI, and I'm the one in charge of finding Ashley. Is there some place we can talk? I need your help."
He nodded,
twerking his face far enough to one side to wipe it against the roll of terry cloth that covered his neck support. Using two fingers, he maneuvered the chair's controls, spinning it 90 degrees and propelling it through the kitchen. His father's clomping footfalls sounded behind her, and she turned.
"He's a minor. I should be there. Watch over him."
He strung the three sentences together into one exhalation, his expression a mixture of anguish and confusion.
"No, Pop, this is private," Bobby said, without pausing or turning around.
He crossed over a wide threshold into another room. Instead of following Bobby, Fagley stopped at the kitchen table and turned to them, hands held, palms up.
"Someone's gotta work, you know? And he's so damn independent, he don't need me."
She caught Burrow's eyes and inclined her head. He engaged Fagley's attention while she sidled to the side, out of his line of vision, listening. Fagley sank into a chair, and Burrows took the seat opposite him.
"Bobby's 17?
Burrows started. Fagley nodded.
"Technically, he doesn't need a parent present unless he requests it. And he hasn't done anything wrong, right?" "Of course not. How could he? Look at the kid, why don't you?"
"What happened?"
Fagley blew his breath out, his face dampening to neutral.
"His mom and him, in the car. He was 12, so she lets him sit in the front seat. Special treat, you know? Anyway, they never saw it coming. 18-wheeler lost his brakes on the hill coming into Murraysville. Her airbag didn't help her none. His work too damn good. Snapped his neck."
Burrows nodded in unison with Fagley's bobbing head, his body language mirroring the other man. Lucy left them and crossed into the next room. Originally a dining room, it had been converted to a bedroom suitable for a wheelchair-bound boy. A hospital bed with an electric lift took up most of the space, but the center of the attention was a large, flat-screen computer monitor rivaling anything they had at the federal building.
"My tech guys would love this," she told Bobby,
watching as he stretched his thumb and first two fingers to manipulate a mouse. The screen came to life, and with it, Bobby's expression.
"Yeah, I use it for school, so my dad lets me dip into the settlement money for upgrades."
"You don't go to regular school?"
"I tried, at first, but..."
His voice caught.
"It just didn't work out. So I do cyber school."
"Isn't that lonely?" His right shoulder twitched. She guessed it was the closest he could come to a shrug.
"Frank and Andy are here most of the time. And there's Dad."
"Frank and Andy?"
"My personal care assistants. They help me,
He glanced in the direction of a doorway leading into a large bathroom, obviously not part of the original house design.
"Get around and stuff."
She noticed the clear tubing running from beneath the leg of his shorts and down into a plastic collection bag. Kid had it rough, but he seemed to handle it all right. Better than his dad, 5 years later. She reminded herself to call Megan again as soon as they were done here. "How did you meet Ashley?" She drew up a wheeled desk chair and sat behind him as he fiddled with the computer controls again. The screen filled with a graphic. Shadow World. "Here. It's an MPRPG," he added.
"You lost me already."
"A multiplayer role-playing game. The DM, Domain Master, creates a world and the rules, and anyone, anywhere in the world with a computer can create a character and join in. Except Shadow World is special. The DM has it limited to players from Western PA."
"Both you and Ashley played this game?"
"I play lots of these. This was the only one Ashley played. She was kind of obsessed. Ran 5 different characters."
"It was a way to be anyone she wanted?"
Lucy hazarded a guess.
"Right.
To tell the truth." His cheeks colored with a blush. "That's why I like SW best. Maestro, the DM, he set it up so girls really get into it. It's not about killing monsters as much as being smart, working together, that kind of thing. Shadow World has more female players than any of the others."
"Except for Sims, of course."
"Of course," she agreed, having no idea what Sims were or why girls were drawn to them.
Can I see Ashley's characters?
I can show you the data sheets and avatars, but wouldn't you rather see the way she drew them? They're so lifelike. It's amazing. You have copies of Ashley's artwork?
The chair whirred as he toggled a switch to elevate him and extend his arm far enough to snag a handle. A large, shallow drawer popped open between them, revealing a stack of sketches inked with vibrant colors. She mailed them to me a few weeks ago. That was the last I heard from her. I figured it was her way of saying goodbye, after she found out the truth. His gaze dropped down to the disappointment his body had become.
I understand. I mean, what girl? You and Ashley met in person?
No. We've talked online for almost a year. Also on the phone and texted each other. Then she said she wanted to meet. That she needed my help. I sent her my address. Told her I had a disability and couldn't leave the house easily. That's when the pictures came in the mail. I figured she must have come by, seen me, and freaked. I never heard from her again. She wouldn't answer her cell. My emails bounced. Nothing.
This was when?
6 weeks ago?
The week before Ashley ran away to her father's house.
How did she act before then?
All summer she's been kind of weird, making up new characters, then dropping them. She was doing great in the game, on track to win it all real soon. But somehow that freaked her out, like she thought she'd lose me or something. I told her we'd still be friends. But there were others hassling her. See, Shadow World is different than any other game out there. Maestro has it set up so that when someone wins the Crown of Cimmeria, the game stops, and all the other characters die in a cataclysmic battle.
But this is all make-believe, so why were they so upset?
His eyes widened as he shook his head at her ignorance.
You don't understand. Some of these guys have been playing SW since it started. To have a girl, just a kid, come along and win it? Not to mention losing characters that they've created and built. Some of these characters were selling on eBay for like hundreds of dollars. But as soon as Vixen won the crown, they'd all be dead. Worthless.
Vixen?
Ashley's main character. That top one. Lucy slid the first sheet of sketch paper from the drawer and held it up. A muscular young woman, brown hair and brown eyes like Ashley's, stared back at her. There, the resemblance ended. Vixen's eyes were slanted, exotic-looking, blending into swept-back hair and high-arched cheekbones, making her look like she was part fox. Her costume continued in the fox motif. Fur pelts as bra and skirt, long talon-like nails. A bandoliered weapons belt held a snaggle-tooth, barbed sword over one shoulder. A curved dagger hung at her hip, and she was barefoot. Her expression was one of hoity confidence, bold, daring, a lot like Melissa Yeager's runway photos. Very different from the self-conscious, eyes-averted Ashley captured in the few family photos Lucy had seen.
Tell me about Vixen.
He rocked his neck from side to side until it cracked. She was Ashley's favorite SW character, but not mine. You know the stories about boys raised by wolves? Think girl raised by foxes. A loner, cunning, no loyalty. She won by hiding in shadows, deception, taking advantage when others were chivalrous, swooping in for the kill if others hesitated. She stole, broke all the rules of civilized behavior. Did she follow the rules of the game? Or was she cheating? Lucy could well see the Ashley she was growing to know compelled to win at all costs, but she didn't think the girl would cross the boundaries and break the rules of the Domain Master.
Oh, no. She never broke any of the Maestro's rules. But there are unwritten rules, you know?
Lately, she didn't even seem to care about her allies, only about winning, at any cost. His voice dropped.
What was the cost, Bobby?
After she created Vixen, about 5 months ago,
She killed off her other characters like they were cannon fodder. Good characters. People I considered friends. Then she led Draco to the slaughter. From the tone of his voice, this fantasy world was more real than the world he found himself imprisoned in. Lucy shuffled the pages of artwork. She held up another sketch, this one of a woman in leggings and a heavy cloak, holding fire in the palm of her hand.
Who's this one?
That's Enchantra. She was the last to go. She was a powerful mage, could transform any element into its opposite. Water to fire, earth to air, that kind of thing. She used her power to save people from the demons of Ochre. Destroying the Demon King was one of the final challenges in the quest for the crown. Draco and Enchantra faced him together, side by side. Together, they mortally wounded him. But as he lay dying, Vixen rushed in and beheaded him, dealing him the killing blow. All his power transferred to her. Lucy remembered the drawing in the back of Ashley's notebook. The one that seemed so powerful yet so sad at the same time.
That's when she betrayed you.
You're Draco, right? He nodded, his lips curled down as if trying to swallow a bitter pill.
I was Draco.
Enchantra was wounded. We could have escaped together. But Vixen killed the king and unleashed his hordes of demons, trapping Enchantra. I tried to save her, but we both were killed. His voice grew heavy, as if he spoke of real people. Lucy looked away while he composed himself and turned to the next drawings. More prototypes of warriors similar to Vixen, but the final one intrigued her. It was a lovely, almost Raphaelesque sketch of a woman with wings.
Who's this character?
Angel. No weapons except for her mind. She protected the innocent and avenged them by forcing villains to relive their crimes over and over every time they slept. My favorite of all Ashley's characters. I tried to encourage her to develop her, but she dropped her without even trying her in the game. Said she was too lame, too weak. That dreams never solved anything. Lucy glanced at the date at the bottom. May. The same time Ashley created Vixen and embraced her dark side. The same time Melissa Yeager noticed problems with Ashley. May. End of the school year. Everyone's feeling the pressure. Did you notice any changes in Ashley? Did she confide in you at all? His finger twitched the toggle switch, sending the chair back and forth in a rocking motion. Bobby's version of pacing. Ashley had it rough last year. She transferred to Gateway from Plum, so she was the new kid. And she kind of had a crush on this older guy. She must have been obvious, 'cause some other kids were teasing her. Then the guy's girlfriend and her friends jumped Ashley in the girls' room one day. Was she hurt? Lucy well remembered how vicious junior high girls could be. Not physically. Emotionally, she was trashed. Then the bullying continued. There were web pages dedicated to outing Ashley as a lesbian, a whole cyber smear campaign. Do you know who was behind it? Ashley had some ideas, but she didn't know what to do about it. But I did. His eyes lit up with the gleam of a true champion. I spend all day with computers, so I'm pretty good with them. I set a trap, set up a voice mailbox and email addy using Ashley's info. When they started spamming it with hate mail, I traced it back. Two girls.
Think they're involved in Ashley's disappearance?
A smile quirked at his lips. I doubt it. They've moved on to high school this year. And I zinged them good. Stole their address books and spammed the hell out of everyone in it. With all the evidence leading back to the girls. They got cyber-slammed by their friends, but good.
So that made Ashley feel better?
He lowered his gaze, long, blonde eyelashes caressing his cheeks.
I wish.
She kind of felt embarrassed by all the attention. I don't think she ever even told her parents about it. But that's when we started getting more serious. I mean, don't get any ideas, nothing creepy. How could there be? His gaze swept the length of his motionless body. Ashley, she's so special. How could a guy not like talking with her? She's bright and funny and talented. If only she weren't so down on herself all the time. Did she ever email you any photos? Photos? No. We talked about setting up a webcam, but I didn't want her to see, you know. Frank helped me send her a photo of me, only my face, so she wouldn't know the truth. She used it to come up with Draco's look. Mainly, we just chatted. Until she sent me her drawings. As he spoke, he flicked the computer mouse and a tall, handsome boy with blonde hair and piercing blue eyes appeared. His hair was long, tangled around his head in spikes ending in flames. His torso was naked except for a sash made of red and gold dragon scales that held a long sword. His breeches were also made of dragon scales, and his dagger was a dragon's claw. Nice! She put a lot of time into this. He blushed again. Yeah. Told you she had talent. I don't know why she wasted it on Vixen. Think maybe that was her way of standing up for herself? Battling the bullies? Maybe. But seems like creeping around in shadows and going off on your own isn't the best way to do things. So, did she win? The Shadow World crown? His shoulder twitched in the heartbreaking almost shrug. Don't know. After Draco was killed, I was locked out of the game. Maestro wouldn't let me back into the site. A few days later was the last I heard from her. That's when we talked about meeting in person, when she said she needed my help. But she never said with what. Lucy considered this. If I put you in touch with my tech guys, would you let them access your email exchanges with Ashley? Sure, anything to help. He rolled the chair back from the desk, met her gaze with a sorrowful expression. Guess I let her down. I should have been a better friend. Should have been there for her. This boy had done more than either of Ashley's parents, that was for certain. Lucy laid her hand over his. I think you were her best friend, Bobby. Her champion. His hand jerked below hers, sending the chair rumbling backwards. Fat lot of good I was. Please find her. Help her. You can do that, can't you? I'm trying my best.